I'd like to call on the former minister, Carlene Maywald, to give us some of her initial thoughts on the on that experience. So at that time, Carlene was the minister for the River Murray and the minister for water security, I think. And as Paul Kiker said earlier, you know, probably remembered as the minister for water insecurity. It's when those tough times come that we realise the value of strong leadership. So I'd welcome Honourable Carlene Maywald to the microphone. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Richard, and also thanks to Iceform for bringing this forum together. It is a critically important part of actually planning for the future to actually have a good, close look at the past and learn the lessons from it. Richard touched upon it, the Minister touched upon it, and Andrew showed you the results of it, creeping drought. Other natural disasters happen. A fire, a flood. The event occurs. You can't plan for it occurring, but when it does occur, you can immediately, once it's over, get into the recovery period. The problem with a drought, like the drought that we experienced over the last decade, is it crept up and it crept up and it crept up. There was no knowledge of when you were actually in the middle of it. There was no knowledge of whether you were still at the start of it or the first part of it. There was no knowledge of when you were going to get to the end of it, except that you could rely, apparently, on historic data to assist you. The biggest problem facing us in this particular event was that the historic data let us down, because the historic data did not demonstrate anything of this severity in the 117 years of records that we have. We now have a new 127 years of records that demonstrate to us that there are a whole range of things that can happen that need to be managed differently. Why wasn't it planned for? Screamed the community. Why didn't government see this coming? There was a whole range of signs. Well, yes, there were a whole heap of signs. Yes, the Murray Mouth did close over in 2002, but it also did close over in 1981. And as Dean Brown informed me just a moment ago, they cleared it by bringing in bulldozers and reopening the mouth back in 1981 also. In 1981, had we gone, the mouth's closed, my gosh, we're going to have 10 years of drought now, let's put in place all of these actions, the community would have gone ballistic. Why are you doing that? We've never seen anything like that before. It's never happened before. We know, we're locals, we've lived it. It can't happen because it's never happened before. Well, we learnt that it can happen and it can hit with a huge force. I became a minister in 2004, which was 2 years after the Murray Mouth began to close. It was a year after the government introduced permanent water conservation measures as a way to actually say to the community, a little bit worried about what's happening here, maybe we should use less water, and being the driest state in the driest inhabitant continent on Earth, we perhaps should be a little bit more serious about how we use our water. So permanent water conservation measures were introduced, and we had an enormous response from that, from the community. It was not drought-driven, it was a sensible policy, and people went, oh, that makes sense. And we saw a decline in the amount of water that people were using before water restrictions were introduced. In 2003, the permanent water restrictions conservation measures came into place. In 2004, when I became the Minister for the River Murray, we started to see a continuing decline in the amount of water available. And irrigators were experiencing their second year of water restrictions for the first time. They had received water restrictions back in 1968, but previous to that and following that, there'd been no water restrictions on irrigators' take from the River Murray. So having two, then three, then 4 years in a row, as the table that Andrew put up before demonstrated, was very, very difficult because it had never happened before. So as a government response, we decided that we really needed to actually pull together the resources that we had, and state governments have limited resources, and pull them together and try and create something to actually respond to the emerging issues as they arose. And we didn't know what they were all going to be, because we didn't know how deep this drought was going to go. We didn't know if it was going to break the following year or whether it was going to continue. And we had to plan and assume that it was not going to end. because if it didn't, we needed to be ready with the actions that we needed to undertake. In 2005, it's pretty scary when someone comes to the cabinet table and says to the cabinet ministers around the table, "We're really worried. We think 1.2 million people could run out of water." And this is before all of the really big issues started to be evident out there in the public. But because of the declining inflows to the Murray-Darling Basin and because of the declining ability for the major storages to recharge themselves, and because the same rules were being applied that had always been applied, that is, we draw it down and fingers crossed it'll fill the next year, and that's what the rules allowed to happen, we were finding ourselves in a very, very precarious position hanging off the end of the system. In 2006, and I remember it distinctly, it was Melbourne Cup Day and we were criticised, as we always are, for actually holding the meeting on Melbourne Cup Day because supposedly we were trying to hide away from the rest of the world and that people wouldn't notice that we were actually meeting and therefore we were doing it in secret. But that was far from what was actually happening. We had the Prime Minister, the Premiers and all water ministers from the Murray-Darling Basin states gathered together in Canberra to talk about what are we going to do, because 2006-2007 saw inflows flatline, completely crash for the first time after a prolonged period of dry. In 2004, I used to go to public meetings and put up this wonderful graph of 117 years of data that said, here we go, here's the dry bits, look at the next year. It always goes up. That's hope. The entire time I was Minister for Water Security, I never saw it go up. So I guess I am probably the Minister for Dry rather than Minister for Water Insecurity, because we actually did undertake some significant measures to try and secure what we make what we had go as far as we possibly could. And that meeting actually was a defining moment. That 2006 Melbourne Cup Day meeting was when the CSIRO was charged by the group that were there. The CSIRO were charged with the duty of assessing the water resources in each of the catchments and resulted in the Sustainable Rivers Audit. It was also when we decided that it was not possible to operate under the existing Murray-Darling rules of sharing water, that they just did not have the capacity to deal with the current shortfall and that we were facing the reality that we were not going to have sufficient water for critical human needs if the existing rules were applied. Just to give you an understanding of what the rules say that we share the water 50% New South Wales, 50% South Australia, and both of them combined have to supply South Australia's minimum 1850 gigalitres of water per annum. It's adjusted for trade, but that's the base number. And that's under normal circumstances. When you start to get dry and you start to see that there's not enough in the dams to cover off on certain criteria and certain thresholds, they go into what they call special accounting, where they share the water a different way. And that shared water is a third, a third, a third to each of the states once you've actually achieved some water for running the river. The interesting thing about that is that third, a third, a third did not take into account what the uses were, and therefore providing a third to one jurisdiction and not to another that has more dependency on for critical human needs, such as South Australia, was not going to work, and South Australia would have been at risk of running out of water. So the senior officials group was established at this meeting as well, and the senior officials group was a group of the chief executives of each of the government agencies responsible for water in the Murray-Darling Basin states. And the senior official groups met regularly to negotiate and put forward to ministers their recommendations for what the new water sharing rules should be. And a couple of things that came out of that process was that South Australia was able to negotiate access to the storages for the first time so that we could actually carry over water from one year to the next, and we could put water aside for critical human needs that we'd either purchased on the market or were able to save through other means. We were able to also negotiate that there was a minimum quantity that had to flow past Wellington. Regardless of how much was in the system, there was a minimum quantity of 350 gigalitres per year that had to flow past Wellington as South Australia's minimum dilution flow. That was to carry salts through the system and to maintain fit-for-purpose water, it's a new catchphrase, the fit-for-purpose water, at the point of offtake at Tailem Bend and Murray Bridge for critical human needs. We were also able to negotiate water sharing arrangements that enabled South Australia to get access to water earlier than we would normally get access to it when there was insufficient water to actually run the river. There was a certain amount of water that was needed to actually keep pumps in water. So the river needs to flow, and that flow was a certain amount that had to be available over the year. So what we would do is we would calculate how much was in the dams. We would then calculate how much we would likely to receive under worst-case scenarios, less a bit. New worst-case scenario was 2006-2007 inflows. We would calculate that number. Then we'd say, all right, what do we need to run the river and how much have we got left for people, stock and domestic, and for irrigation after that. Now, on a couple of occasions there, we did not have sufficient water in the Murray system to meet those needs. And so we had to draw on water from other systems, and we had to draw down from the Murrumbidgee systems and the Goulburn and Victorian river systems. And that meant that those communities had water that they were legally entitled to taken away from them to provide for the needs of downstream users in South Australia. And all those negotiations were hard fought, because you must understand that in every state, we were not just negotiating about a drop of water, we were negotiating about the sustainability of our communities and the ability to be able to provide water first for potable purposes, and secondly to maximise whatever we could for economic activity following that. So it really was sheep station negotiations. And everyone played hard, and played very hard, and there simply just was not enough to go around. But in that process, there were water sharing arrangements that were actually established that enabled us to have sufficient water to bring into this state to actually prevent absolute environmental collapse and to provide for sufficient critical human needs. Now, if it had gone on another year, that might not have been the case. Now, I guess the triage actions that Andrew talked about earlier were critically important, because we had to actually plan forward on the basis of what-if scenarios. What if this happened? What if this happened? What if this happened? What if this happened? And what would we do? Now, it's very, very difficult to bring your communities along in that environment, because the way in which the media and the opposition and communities approach these things is about, firstly, media, what's controversial? Secondly, opposition, how can I get the government? Thirdly, community, well, what about me? And everyone, no matter where you stand in the river system, looks upstream with envy and downstream in disdain. And you can never find a thing, a reasonable way forward that's going to actually meet everyone's needs when you're taking something from, well, you're trying to distribute something that's of limited resource availability amongst so many competing demands. So we had to try and weigh up all of these issues on a daily basis. And in South Australia, we did that by establishing the Water Security Task Force, the Technical Water Working Group, and we actually dealt with the issues as they emerged one by one. And the triage actions meant that we needed to actually plan for things that we hoped we were never going to implement. I don't know how many times I said, we do not want to build a weir. But was I believed? No. Because we were planning, or doing the planning, just in case we had to build a weir, it must be so, we are going to build this thing. The government never, not in one circumstance, wanted to build a weir at Wellington. And those of you who are engineers in the room here would probably understand why, if you saw the information that the government had available to it in relation to how you would have to go about building a weir there. Below Murray Bridge, there is just insufficient hard base under the river system to build something permanent that's going to provide for a long-term ability to sustain floods and drought periods. We actually settled on a temporary type of model for the weir, and that temporary model required it to be 2.3 kilometres long, because the only place we could find with some sort of base, and it was a clay base, was below the Wellington at Pomanda. And at Pomanda, there was an area there where there was not even clay. You know, they put the testing equipment down and 70 metres of silt. There was just nothing to build it on. So it would have been a floating type of structure. You can't build a lock that's going to be sustainable through the future events of flood in that kind of an environment. So we had to look at all of those sorts of things and say, well, what would we do? We needed to build a weir if we got insufficient flows to actually push the salt past Tailem Bend and Wellington. And the reason why we needed to do that was to sustain a potable supply into Adelaide of fresh water. It was not about blocking off the river, but actually trying to stop the salinity from building up and coming back from the lakes. Now, we did the work on that. We spent probably about $14 million, I think it was, in preparations for that, just in case. Thank goodness we've had to shelve them. That information will be there next time if needed, but we hope it never is. What if we were unable to supply bottled water? Sorry, what if we were unable to supply water even with the Wellington weir in a potable condition because the salinity continued to build up behind the weir, which was a possibility if the drought continued for many more years? So we actually looked at bottled water and would we supply bottled water to the people of Adelaide and could we do it? So we made inquiries, and because we made inquiries, of course, that then gets blown out of proportion and that we're planning to provide bottled water to South Australians instead of actually doing what we were doing, which is contingency planning to make sure we would cover off on any eventuality. But during that time, we also introduced programs for watering for permanent plantings to keep permanent plantings alive. We did the pipelines, we did the dredging of the mouth, we extended the footings of the ferries, all those others. But other critical things we did were things like trade. Trade was opened up across the basin during that period of time also, which was critically important for our irrigators in South Australia to get access to as much water as they possibly could. We enabled a policy of carryover water so people could purchase water when it was available, put it in the dams for storage and carry it over to next year. We appointed the community liaison managers. We had drought reference groups. I attended untold numbers of public meetings, shed meetings, small group meetings over the period of time. And we set up drought response centres. We had to build the environmental regulators, as Andrew said. We bombed the lake areas of the lakes with lime. You know, we had to implement some restrictions and rebates. We got the desalination plant off the go. We got the Water for Good project underway and the Water for Good strategy, which is now seen worldwide as a fabulous example of policy development for best practice worldwide. It's not necessarily seen that good here, but it is definitely worldwide. 4 minutes. We also lowered the pumps. We put in new filtration plants as well for water filtration to country communities because the risk of algal blooms were quite high. We purchased an enormous amount of water from upstream where we could to enable us to actually back up the water supplies. We commenced the rebates schemes to actually encourage people to use less water. We had science forums to actually inform the science community about what was happening at the time. We negotiated across the board with through the senior official groups, but we also negotiated one-on-one with the other state governments for various issues as well. During that time also, Malcolm Turnbull introduced the National Plan for Water Security. That was in January 2007. The Prime Minister and Malcolm Turnbull introduced that as a way forward, and that commenced the process we're now going through with the development of the Basin-wide Plan. The Water Act was passed. These were all jobs that the departments were having to do at the same time as manage the crisis and manage the communities. And in that, you've got environmentalists versus irrigators, you've got upstream versus downstream, you've got city versus country, you've got a lack of understanding of information or selectively choosing information to back up one position or another position. And that was one of the things that I found the most frustrating, that no matter who was actually arguing a point, they would only listen to the bit of information that supported the argument that they wanted to put forward. It's very difficult for people who have an issue that they're dealing with and living to actually see the bigger picture. And the importance of strong leadership in that environment to actually say, all right, I need to see the big picture. I understand that there's a whole range of issues for different individuals and different communities that are being impacted by the decisions that we're making, but that it was critically important to try wherever possible to actually focus on the bigger picture, which is what I endeavoured to do. It was an interesting and difficult time. It was a time where we lived as a government and a group of government agencies on the brink and on crisis watch every single day. Andrew Beale, I think he didn't sleep for 2 years. I'm certain he didn't, because he was available on call for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as were many other people within the department. I woke up every morning to the sound of my media advisor telling me which crisis we were dealing with in the press today. It was a critically difficult period of time to not only manage all of those things that were going on, but to also manage a community that was under enormous stress, and to try and do our best to minimise the impacts on our community and the long-lasting impacts. Had we done nothing, acid sulphate soils, would have impacted and made an enormous problem for the Lower Lakes in the longer term, and we'd still be dealing with that now and probably for another few decades. If we hadn't acted and done some of the things, we would have been on bottled water in Adelaide. If we hadn't been able to provide for critical water for permanent plantings, we would have seen significantly more permanent plantings go out of play. So whilst we could not meet everyone's needs, we met as many as we possibly could with what was available to us. And considering the extent of the drought that we achieved, the fact that we have managed to come through the other side of it with still managing some serious legacy issues, but still being a community that has the opportunity for a vibrant future, I think is critically important. I've been very fortunate to have a great team of people working with me during that period of time, and also the ability for elevating people who had particular skills in particular areas, such as, you know, there's a few of them all around the room. It's like Groundhog Day today, coming in here with all of the people that we used to work with. And seeing those people rise to the challenge was quite extraordinary. It also triggered a whole range of national rethinking and reform processes that I'm still a part of today, and am very happy to be involved with. And it's ironic that you're doing this and undertaking this forum today, right when we're in the heart of the release of the new Murray-Darling Basin Plan, which we hope will provide for a better basis for which we will manage the next drought and the next drought and the next drought beyond. Thank you.